Okay, so welcome everybody to our morning program today. Again, I would like to begin by asking for all of your blessings so I can offer some little service here to all of you. So as you may know, we don't have a regular Bhagavatam class this morning, but I was invited to give I don't hardly even want to call it a seminar. It's just kind of a little overview of a topic which I actually have many courses on, this topic of spiritual culture. Let me maybe just say a few introductory words. Maybe some of you know, they have heard me sharing this, that for the last 20 years, I have been spending a considerable time in Bangladesh. And yeah, Bangladesh, very special place. It's really the place to experience Vaishnav culture, because most of our Mahaprabhu's eternal associates, they come from that part of Bengal, which is Bangladesh today. And because it is a Muslim country, our Vaishnav culture has really been preserved there immensely. So, and when I'm there, there's no Western devotees living there because it's a little more austere there. It's like India 50 years ago or something, just to give you some idea. So, and when I'm there, I'm only with the locals. I live with them, I travel with them, I preach with them, I eat with them. And over 20 years, I have received quite some transformational insights, actually, how our Vaishnav culture is actually meant to be lived, how it is meant to be practically applied. So, and this definitely has transformed my personal practice and also my humble preaching efforts. So much so that 5 years ago, I came to the point where I thought, all right, let's establish a little institute for spiritual culture. So if you go on my website, which is So if you go on my website, therootsofspiritualculture.net, you will see the whole thing there. And I have put together all different courses, all dealing with the practical application, the living of our Vaishnav culture, how we actually are meant to put it all into practice. So, and all these courses are actually 15 hours. And I have been traveling and trying to offer these courses. But then I started realizing most people don't have the time to attend 15-hour courses. You know? So now I have started to put them into book form. That's the two books which I'm showing out there. So, and I'm hoping that Krishna gives me enough time in this body so I can manage to put all the courses into book form, because I find them all so relevant. Just as an example, I have a whole course on the Vanaprastha Ashram. Nobody even talks about it much. It's not really established, you know, and I have a whole systematic course on that with materials and. So I can't wait to get that course into a book form, you know, or also a course on family life as an ashram. Of course, there's so many manuals about Grihastha life, but yeah, I'm coming from a slightly different point to actually really make it clear what does it mean that family life is an ashram. We are not there yet, actually. Already, you know, looking at our high divorce rate, 60% divorce rate, so obviously there's no divorce in a Grihastha ashram. So obviously we're not there yet. And it actually requires a whole transformation to really make one's family life an ashram, you know, because we're so conditioned of material family life and we are surrounded by that propaganda and that's what all we know. So to actually make a family life, our family life, into an ashram, that requires systematic training and preparation and education. So this is where I'm coming from type thing, you know, that's my humble little mission. We all need a mission, you know, so that's my mission. So, and today I would like to actually introduce to you this book, Sheltering Relationships, The Foundation to Devotee Care. And I find this an excellent introduction to the topic of culture. Because, I mean, let's first of all understand sheltering relationships. We are not talking about married life here. We are actually talking, in a nutshell, we are talking about the importance of having a mentor, a coach, and also becoming one ourselves one day. So, and I'm very well aware of it, that in your community here, you do have that understanding, and there is some mentorship program going on. And I simply hope that maybe this little introduction this morning, and also if you will get a book, that will give you a much more deeper insight and a deeper conviction that yes, without this giving and accepting shelter, I actually cannot really progress. Because unless we have that clear conviction, very easily having a mentor remains a formality. Just a social thing, all right, my Gumaj wants me to have a mentor, otherwise I cannot get the recommendation for initiation. Okay, let's just accept a mentor, you know, but internally we are not taking shelter. Yes, we maintain our independence. And very easily such a mentorship structure, and I hope you don't mind me saying it, I'm just saying that risk is there, that a mentorship structure can even become a structure to have control and power over people. I've seen also that going on in different parts of the world. You know, yes, that's maybe one reason why some people shy away of such kind of system, you know. Yeah, so there's all kinds of deeper aspects and subtleties there involved, which I'm trying to, you know, highlight from all different angles in this book. And of course, this morning, you know, we have, I do want to leave some time for questions. And so we are very limited in time. I can only actually try and make you curious. You know, so that's what I'm trying to do here. So, but just, let's understand this topic of taking shelter. This actually accompanies us throughout our whole spiritual practice. That's what actually is the essence of Krishna consciousness, to take shelter. To take shelter of Krishna, to take shelter of the holy name, to take shelter of Prabhupada, to take shelter of Guru, and to take shelter of the Vaishnavas. So it's like the essence of Krishna consciousness. So, and very, as I mentioned, very easily, unless we get some deeper understanding of the importance of actually taking shelter, it can all remain very easily a formality. And I once had an initiating guru sharing with me that the biggest challenge of being a Diksha guru, according to his observation and experience, is that you can really see exactly what your disciple is meant to hear, what instruction you would like to give your disciple, but because he's not ready to accept, you cannot give it. So, you know, he was expressing that this is the biggest challenge in being guru. Wow. So that already makes it very clear that we are not there yet also in actually taking shelter. Because the way I define a sheltering relationship, that's one aspect that we want to be corrected and instructed by this person. So if we don't even have this attitude towards our Diksha Guru, my God, you know, that's exactly what I'm trying to say here, that very easily, even in relationship to our Guru, our attempts to take shelter is not that deep. It is not really coming deeply from the heart. We actually don't want to hear, you know, some correction, some instruction. We rather have our independence and do what we like and so on, you know. So it is actually a highly relevant topic, really, on all levels, you know. And also, yes, so what we talk about here is that sheltering relationships means we give shelter to those who are less experienced, and we accept shelter of those who are more experienced. Right? That ties together with Nectar of Instruction, fourth verse, the six loving exchanges, Guhyam Akhyati Prichyati, you know, to reveal our mind and confidence and to speak confidentially. Actually, in the purport to this verse, Prabhupada says, actually, Guhyam Akhyati Prichyati means more experienced devotee explains, a less experienced devotee learns from him. So that's exactly what we are talking here about, the giving shelter and accepting shelter. It's actually a loving exchange. And now the way it actually ties in with culture is that in materialistic culture, where sense gratification is the all-in-all goal in life, nobody wants to give shelter and nobody wants to take shelter. Whereas in a culture where self-realization is the goal in life, God consciousness, it's the most natural foundation of any more meaningful relationship. Right? You with me? Yes, you with me? You understand what I'm trying to say? Yes? Yes. Okay, good. Just to double check whether I'm reaching you here. Yes, so this, and I mean, in the book, I'm explaining this in all detail, that actually the qualities we need to have to be eager for shelter, these qualities people don't strive for in material life. They're almost seen as a weakness. Yes, you know, so that's why it ties in very nicely. It's a perfect introduction to the topic of culture, you know, because as we may all know, and tomorrow we'll continue on that topic, this topic of culture is quite a controversial topic in ISKCON. There's quite a bit of tension over this. So, and that's why I always like to start with this kind of approach, which is a non-controversial topic, the topic of taking shelter, you know. And there we already see, wow, you know, in material life and its culture, people don't strive for giving shelter. I mean, giving shelter means you actually have to sacrifice yourself. You have to reach out selflessly. You have to spend your time and energy, you know, to actually uplift and care and listen for those who are less experienced, you know. And in material life, nobody could be bothered, you know. Yes, nobody could be bothered. And accepting shelter means, you know, it requires some humility. You actually, you know, open up your heart and you reveal your mind and you ask for guidance. But in material life, you know, everybody thinks, oh, I'm the self-made man. I can work out my own life here. I don't need anybody to stick my nose in my life and tell me what to do. And, you know, so, yes. So, you know, in material life, nobody wants to give shelter. Nobody wants to take shelter. Definitely. Whereas in spiritual life, it's the most natural foundation of any more deep and meaningful relationship. Like that, yeah. And I mean, let me share a few more thoughts and realizations just to show you how I got into this topic, because I'm sure many of us who've been around for, let's say, longer than 20 years, 25 years, you may also have made this observation that so many devotees come to Krishna consciousness and they hang around for a while, but then for some reason, many of them fade away again. And they somehow, go in different directions, and somehow we don't see them much anymore. Any of you has had this experience? Yes. I mean, this is really a worldwide thing, you know? Yes, yes, yes. Of course, here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, we have the good fortune. We have so many devotees from the early days and disciples of Srila Prabhupada and. But yeah, I mean, I always make this half-joking comment, which is actually not a joke, it's true, that sometimes when you go to a community after 20 years, the only personalities who you have seen before are their lordships. And everybody else, it's all new faces. Where is everybody? You know, from the old days. I very strongly had that experience because, as you may know, I joined Krishna consciousness in Australia, and then I, you know, was in Europe and Latvia, so many places, and I hadn't been there for a long time. And then after about 15 or 18 years, I went back to Australia to do some medical treatments. And I was really excited. I thought, oh, wow, I'm going to meet all my old friends from the early days, and this is going to be fantastic, and how nice. And I was eagerly waiting for the first Sunday program. But then, where is everybody? You know, I met maybe one or two or something, but I started wondering, where is everybody? And then I thought, oh, surely when the first gurus are coming to visit, then everybody will come. You know, but so many gurus came, and again, where is everybody, you know? And then I thought, oh, surely Janmashtami, people will come, you know? But then again, Janmashtami, where is everybody, you know? So, and I mean, I couldn't stop thinking about this. I thought, God, what's going on? What are we doing wrong? What's missing? You know, that we cannot somehow keep people in the fire of devotional life and active. Of course, some people may go to different countries or different communities in the country. It's not that they all gave up Krishna consciousness or something. Or they may do quietly something at home or something. But yeah, I mean, I really couldn't stop thinking about this, you know, that what is missing? And I almost came to the point that I felt, well, what's the use even for our outreach efforts? You know, what's the use if we can't actually keep people in the fire of devotional life and actively contributing to the temple and? What's the use? And I was for some years a member of this Strategic Planning GBC Committee for Devotee Care. And this committee actually came about, initially it was a preaching committee, actually. So in this preaching committee, there was two sides, two moods. One mood was, yes, let's reach out, let's bring new people to Krishna consciousness. And then the other mood was, hang on, where were all the devotees who joined years ago? Where were they? You know, how can we reanimate them? And how can we bring them back to life? So these two moods were there. So, and then the preaching committee became a devotee care committee. Yes. And for quite some years, there was no preaching committee. There was only devotee care committee. And that's when this term of devotee care became a really, you know, a really prominent term in ISKCON. Everybody all of a sudden was talking about devotee care. And at the ILS, you know, the committee, we did all kinds of presentations there to bring awareness of this topic of devotee care, you know. So, and then later, there was a preaching committee, which they called outreach committee. So there was outreach and devotee care. So that's how, you know, just to give you some information on how these terms all developed and what is my connection with this, you know, because I was in this devotee care committee for some years. So, and in this devotee care committee, you know, we presented these points, you know, that actually the foundation to devotee care has to be sheltering relationships. Yes. And all other aspects of care are based on the sheltering relationships. So the sheltering and trusting and confidential relationships, that should be the foundation. Because also we can say, well, why should we really, you know, stretch ourselves and reach out and care if a person doesn't actually take shelter and guidance, you know? Because so many difficulties in life we can actually avoid when we take guidance. So this trusting, mentoring relationships should really be the foundation to all other aspects of care, material, emotional, whatever they may be, you know? And actually, just to be clear, we have that nice model of Chaupati community, you know? That's basically what it is all about, really. And also, His Holiness Nanjo Swami, he actually captured that idea from Radha Swami and Chaupati, and he applied this in Ukraine for the last 20 years or even more. He has been tirelessly, you know, promoting, preaching, pushing, inspiring this whole idea. I mean, really tirelessly, giving really his life to this. I mean, you may know he also put a book together, Taking Care of Krishna's Devotees. You know this book here? No? Yeah, anyway, if you go to India, you will find it there. Yeah, so, and because I have been for 20 years very much involved in Ukraine as a preacher, that's where I have witnessed how, you know, if we take this seriously and deeply, this whole mentorship idea, that puts so much stability into people's personal life and into the communities. So much. I mean, Ukraine is one of the most dynamic and preaching places in the world, I dare say. You know, you may have heard about this gigantic Bhakti Sangam festival every year we have in at the Black Sea there. You know, we just had it 2 weeks ago or something, beginning of middle of September, actually. There's 8,000 devotees coming, you know, for 5 days. And they're all basically locals. There's a few coming from Russia, a few from the Baltics, very few from other countries. But the main chunk is the Ukrainian devotees, because 2 weeks later, a similar program is happening in Russia for the Russian devotees, you know. So, I mean, if you really want to experience the closest thing to Vaikuntha atmosphere, I mean, every devotee in ISKCON should at least once attend this festival. It's really, wow, it's really Vaikuntha atmosphere, you know. And they're all practicing devotees. They're all Ukrainian devotees. There's not many Indian-bodied devotees, you know. Yes, I mean, I have absolutely nothing against Indian Buddhist devotees or something. But, you know, in one sense, you may think, oh, well, 8,000, we have so many people coming here at the manor to our programs, Diwali, I don't know how many people you get here, you know, but no, they're all local people and they're practicing devotees, you know? Yes. So that does make a little difference there, you know? Yes. So in any case, so this is, you know, why I am so sold out to this topic of mentorship, because it actually pains my heart that we have lost so many devotees because of that thing, because we basically have not understood that just having a Diksha Guru is not enough. It's not enough. You know, not wanting to minimize the Diksha Guru's role and position, of course, but it's just like that very practical thing that our Diksha Gurus have often thousands of disciples. We may see them a couple of times a year or something. They cannot possibly know each and every individual person's practical situation in life and what needs to be adjusted and. Not possible, you know? So we do need some more immediate guidance and sheltering relationships there, you know. Apart from the fact that I also have made that personal observation that very often when devotees actually face some crisis in their life, they don't so easily run to their Diksha Guru, you know. Yes. Actually, this whole process of accepting shelter has to really start with the Vaishnavas around us. Because with Guru, the false ego is more in the way, and we want to look like a really fixed-up devotee, and we think, oh, what will he think if I share all these innermost fears and struggles here I'm facing, and he will not understand anyway, and, you know, so, yes, so, but, you know, that's the point. Unless we really cultivate this trusting, sheltering relationships in a more immediate platform there, you know, very difficult to actually really run to Guru and take shelter when we have a problem, you know, yes. So anyway, these are just, some, let's say, introductory thoughts here. So let me share. I have collected all kinds of nice quotes here. So let me just start and share a few things here. So there is a nice quote from Jiva Goswami in the Madhava Mahotsava, where he makes the following statement. He says, though one usually ignores others in attaining one's goals, those aspiring for prema, they accept dependence on others with similar goals and tastes. Thus, cooperating with each other, they worked together, keeping in mind the goal of prema. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda Shishi Sitam Lakshman Hanuman Shishi Gonataki Jai. So, what does Jiva Goswami say here? He's basically saying that there's two kinds of people in this world. The one usually ignores others in attaining one's own goals. So, here he's speaking about the common person, the materialist. They act like that. Whereas those aspiring for prema, they act differently. They accept dependence on others who have similar goals and tastes. And they cooperate. They don't ignore each other. So that already, again, connects with the topic of culture. And interestingly, already Jiva Goswami made that observation, you know, 500 years ago already that was there, that we have the materialists, they have their way of building relationships, and the spiritualists have a different way of of connecting and building relationships. So that already really ties in with the whole concept of culture, that in a culture where sense gratification is the all in all, people don't only ignore each other, but they do so much more. I mean, usually I like to be interactive, but we just don't have the time, I'm sorry. So I'll just have to present these things because I do want to leave a little bit of time for questions. So yes, they don't only ignore each other, but they do so much more. They actually push each other out of the way. They step on each other's heads to get up there. There's a whole competitive mood, you know, whenever sense gratification is the all in all, immediately competition and envy enters the relationships, right? And there's this whole mood of separatism and individualism, being the self-made man, and, you know, also a higher standard of life easily gives that illusion of freedom and independence, that not relationships become the source of our stability and protection and security, but actually money, right? Money becomes the source of security the more the standard of life is higher. Whereas, you know, when the standard of life is lower, people more easily understand that actually if you have tight relationships, you get further in life. And money will not be the security because there is not much money. It's as simple as that, you know. So, yes. So there is, the relationships are more external. They're actually more superficial because they're based on sense gratification. I scratch you back, you scratch mine. And while you please my senses, I'm friends with you, and when somebody else comes along who pleases my senses better, then that person is friends with me, you know? So the mindset is, what can I get out of people? How can I use people for my convenience, for my interest? So today, this person is convenient for me, and tomorrow that person is convenient for me. You know, so the relationships are rather superficial and external and interchangeable, actually, you know. And life becomes more impersonal, actually, you know. Yeah, and people are pretty selfish, self-centered, just my goals, you know. That's the all in all, my success, my achievements, and everybody's really busy, busy, running, 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 you know, just trying to get all their agendas met there and just, yeah, being on their mission, you know, and ignoring others. No time for other people, and it's just me and my goals, and if I'm just expert enough in pushing everybody out of the way, then I'm getting there to success. So that's the mindset in a culture where sense gratification is the all in all, right? So now, mindset in a culture where self-realization, where God consciousness is the main goal, there the mindset is very different, very opposite actually. So there, as Jiva Goswami says, we actually like to accept dependence on others with similar goals and tastes, and we cooperate. So, and of course, the dependence is an internal dependence. It's not a financial dependence or anything like that, but it's the internally feeling I am dependent on that person's mercy and guidance and good advice and. And there is respect there and a mood of service, you know? In spiritual life, we understand our position of servant. So no matter where we are, towards seniors equals juniors, we serve. The mindset is not what can I get for myself, but what can I give to others? How can I serve? How can I contribute? What can I give? You know, so it's a very different mindset. And of course, with such kind of mindset, the way of building relationships is very different, right? Yeah, and thus, and it is a very natural exchange that those who are more experienced, they extend themselves and affectionately uplift and guide those who are less experienced. And those who are less experienced, they serve the more experienced persons and they ask for advice, for guidance. They inquire. Pari prashnena sevaya. So that's not only there towards guru, but actually towards any more experienced person. We should have that way of associating. That's how we take advantage of the presence of a senior person, that we serve and we inquire. In spiritual culture, completely natural. You see? And so that makes this loving exchange, which also Rupa Goswami is giving us, so that makes the relationship deep and meaningful. Not superficial and external and interchangeable, but actually deep and meaningful. Right? So, and I mean, you know, living here in the Western world, London, I think we have to be clear that we are heavily bombarded and surrounded by materialistic propaganda. We are actually conditioned by that. It's rather subtle. We may not even realize. We may think, you know, we make our own decisions in life, but no, we are actually a product of our surroundings. You know, that conditioning is very deep, very subtle. Not so easy to shake this off and actually transform. Not so easy. Yeah, so obviously it requires a little bit of facilitation to get away from this conditioning of self-made man and ignoring everybody else and actually, you know, reaching out and serving. I mean, that is our philosophy. We are meant to be servant. Serving the devotees is one of the keys to success. But then are we actually practically living it? You know, that's my interest, you know. Are we not only declaring, yes, here's the medicine, but are we actually taking it and are we living it? You know, and I mean, I have these experiences. Sometimes senior devotees ask me, or, you know, well, how do you think, how can I contribute to Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement? I've been around for 25, 30 years and I've done it all. I've cooked the Sunday feast and I've done this and done that. So what next? What, how can I move on in my life and make a contribution? And then sometimes I tell people, yes, become a mentor. You know, extend yourself and give guidance and reach out to the young generation and share your life experience. And then sometimes I get this answer that the person says, oh, really? I think I couldn't be bothered. I have had such answers. I think I couldn't be bothered. So much trouble, so much headache. You know, yes. So, you know, just as a little example, that it is not so easy to actually live our formula of being the humble servant. We like to repeat this under each letter, you servant, da, 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 da. But are we really servant? You know, not so easy, not so easy, you know. So another thing is in the Garuda Purana, there's another nice statement. One cannot be liberated without association with a pure devotee of the Lord. So we may have heard this many times, but then part two comes, and unless one shows mercy to those in an inferior position, one's life will be superficial. Yes, that's what we just discussed. You know, unless we actually come to the point where we want to reach out and uplift and genuinely care for the spiritual development of younger devotees, our life is superficial. And not only our life, our relationships. Superficial, why? Because we are selfish. We just worry about me and my development and maybe my family, that's how Prabhupada says, that's extended selfishness, you know, my family. But if it doesn't go beyond my family, you know, it's selfishness. Our life will be superficial. And not only our life, our relationships. And this brings us to this realization that yes, in material life, sense gratification is the foundation for the relationships. Let's enjoy together, have a good time, go to the movies, this, that, whatever. So then when we come to Krishna consciousness, we kind of theoretically understand, okay, sense gratification we want to kick out of our life. So, but unless we replace it with these two principles of giving and accepting shelter, there is a vacuum there in the relationships. They are hollow. There's a vacuum there. Yeah, you get this point? Yes. It's really an important point, which I have observed on my travels. You know, that you come to a wonderful place. I'm not talking about you here or anything. I'm just saying in general terms. You come to a wonderful place. We have so many wonderful places here in Europe, castles and this and that, you know. And you think, wow, this is fantastic. I want to stay here, you know. But then, you know, you observe that there's something a little unusual going on, that everybody's sitting in their rooms and then coming out, doing their service. Yes, yes, I have to cook, do the aarti, whatever. And then, boom, back in the room, they'll close the door. And yes, and you think, my God, something is missing here, you know. The atmosphere can be really impersonal and almost a little weird, sorry to say, you know. So, and it took me quite a while. I'm that kind of person. I always try to get to the roots of the problem, and I think, what's going on here? What's missing? So what's missing is exactly this, giving and accepting shelter. That's not there. Nobody gives shelter and reaches out. Nobody accepts shelter. And then the whole foundation to the relationships is not there. You know? Yes. And life just becomes impersonal. There's a vacuum, a hollow emptiness in the relationship. I like to call these kind of relationships Harry Bowl relationships. Yeah, you understand what a Harry Bowl relationship is. You know, when we say, oh, yeah, Harry Bowl, Prabhu, Harry Bowl, Mataji, nice to see you. Oh, how are you? Harry Bowl, yes, I have to run and do my service. Harry Bowl, see you later. You know, so we are Harry Bowling around. So, but yeah, I mean, my God, you know, of course, we can't have a deeper relationship with everyone in the community, but at least with somebody, you know? At least with some personalities in our life, there has to be something deeper than just Harry Bowl. You know? Yes. Yes. So, yeah, I think we all have plenty of Harry Bowl relationships in our life. And, I mean, yeah, there's so much more to say, but, yes, I do sometimes like to shake people up and make maybe some little provocative statement. So please don't mind me saying, but sometimes I have this observation that, you know, even non-devotees, sometimes they deal with each other more nicely than we devotees, you know. And I started thinking about that. How is it? How does that happen? So, and I realized, yes, non-devotees, at least they have that foundation of sense gratification. They want to enjoy with each other. So, and that's why they have this motivation of being nice to each other so that they get something out of each other, you know. But we devotees, we kick out this foundation, and, well, then very easily, you know, we treat each other not as nice as non-devotees, you know? Yeah, you get my point? Yeah, again, because this giving and accepting shelter is not there, and that material motivation is not there to be nice with each other. So we get something out of that person in some way or another. Yeah, so I mean, all these things, wow, you know, they make it very clear that we do need, you know, some more internal transformational work here. And also it always starts with training and education, that we become aware, that we become conscious of all these things, you know. Prabhupada always said before becoming Krishna conscious, we have to become conscious first. And so often we are just so unconscious because all these things are rather subtle and we may not even understand why things are the way they are, you know. And then if we don't understand, difficult to change things, you know. If we don't have a clear goal, what we actually have to strive for and how we have to transform things, then, yeah, well, we just go along with the flow here and so on, you know. Yes, and I mean, let me share a few more thoughts. As we go through life, we always meet so many challenges, you know. And also Krishna's testing us. Yes, and the tests become more and more difficult, actually, as we mature in devotional life, because Krishna has to uproot the more subtle anattas, and in order to get to them, you know, he has to dig deep there with his bite. So the tests become actually more and more severe. So, and yeah, so many challenges are there, you know, like a young person may join the Brahmacharini ashram. So, new challenge. Then we may come to the point, oh, maybe I should get married. Wow, another new challenge. So then we become father, mother. Oh, my God, another new challenge. So then the children become teenagers. Oh, my God, another new challenge. And then actually we should move on to the vanaprastha ashram. Another new challenge. You know, so life is full of challenges. And there's always somebody around who's got more experience facing this challenge than I have. So it would actually be the most, you know, most intelligent thing to take guidance in order to master the challenges which I'm facing. Right? Most natural, most intelligent, actually. And we could save ourselves so many miseries if we would just take guidance. But unfortunately, we often don't want to take guidance, you know, or we only come and take guidance when we have already made our life in such a mess. You know, I experience this a lot because, well, giving all these courses, naturally people ask, they come and ask for guidance, you know, and very often I'm thinking, God, why are you only coming now? After entangling yourself and making such a mess out of your life, and then you come and expect me to solve it or something, you know, so why not take guidance a little earlier before you make your decisions, you know? But yeah, we are not quite there yet to understand, you know. I mean, basically it is a lack of humility, basically, you know, that we think we know it all and we can work it all out and we've got everything under control and. So, and then we don't ask for guidance before we make the decisions, you know, but only if we are really stuck in a whole unwanted situation, you know, and then it's so troublesome to get out of this, you know. So we could actually go so much more smoothly through life if we would take guidance, you know. And I mean, yeah, again, in spiritual culture, it's very natural that the elders, they're there and they guide and advise. And that's what it means to get somebody's blessings, you know. We think to get the blessing is I make my decision and then I just say, oh, please give me your blessings for my decision, you know. But this is not the blessings, you know. The real blessings is to get the instruction and the advice before we make the decision. Right? Also, there is another important point that actually as long as we have material desires and attachments, we actually cannot objectively assess ourselves. We cannot. Our vision of ourselves is foggy, it's clouded. We can almost say it doesn't really matter on which level of advancement we are. You know, even if we are on a higher level of advancement, we cannot objectively see where we are standing. And that's exactly why we need a mentor, a coach. We should want to have such sheltering relationships, you know. Jiva Goswami says, those who are aspiring for prema, they want to accept dependence, you know. Yes, so, and I mean, a good example from the Shastra is actually Bharat Maharaj. You know, this is a real classic devotee care story. You know, so Bharat Maharaj, he was on the level of Baba, and he wanted to give care to this helpless deer. It started all in great terms, you know. But we can say, because he was all alone in the forest, because he didn't have a mentor who tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, it's enough now with the deer. You know, just get back to your sadhana here. Let the deer be deer. You know, he got completely carried away with the deer. I mean, my God, when you read that in the Bhagavatam, you really wonder, you know, because he's got the deer on his chest at night, embracing, and if I'm not wrong, even kissing the deer. And, oh, my God, you know, you really think, what is this, you know? So and that just shows, that's a warning to us, that even on the level of bhava, you know, where we experience transcendental emotions, they can go back into material attachments, actually. Yeah, that risk is there, you know. So, I mean, that's a good example, which should be a warning to us that even on the higher levels of devotional life, we do need such trusting, confidential relationships with a well-wishing friend who is more experienced and who has no other interest except our spiritual journey and development. Yes, no other interest. Absolutely none. No material, no emotional, even no managerial interest. Yeah, I mean, I hope I'm not getting myself into trouble here saying these things. But actually, also one aspect of devotee care is really that understanding that we cannot always be so project-focused. We have to become more people-focused. Yes. In saying this, I am not by no means, you know, criticizing managers. I mean, I was temple president's wife for 10 years. I do know what it means to be in management, what a challenge it is, you know, to make ends meet, to get all the bills paid, to get all the services covered, and whew, it's a challenge. And because it is such a challenge, we can't blame the managers that they wear the managerial glasses. It's only natural because that's their job. That's their outlook. You know? So, but there should be somebody there. It should be balanced with somebody who doesn't have the managerial glasses. You know? And I guess that's why, that's where the brahmanas come in, because the or the kshatriyas, they were having a brahminical aloof advisor, a Chanakya pandit, who would give the aloof advice and make sure things are going for everybody's ultimate welfare of going back home, back to Godhead. You know, that's the brahmana's job. They don't have any interest in power, title, position, you know, money. They're aloof. They're meant to be aloof from all that. And then they can give that advice just to balance everything so it is for everybody's upliftment, you know? Yeah, so, and not only the Kshatriyas and kings need such an aloof Brahminical advisor, but actually everybody does, you know. And if I may mention this, this is also, in my humble observation, one reason why we have, you know, why we had this thing that so many gurus and sannyasis could not maintain their position. You may know I am with the third Diksha Guru now. And just by the way, they were all the perfect gurus at the certain time. I have no grudges or hard feelings whatsoever. It was all perfect. If I hadn't taken shelter of those personalities, my whole life would have gone completely differently. I would have never ended up in Bangladesh. I wouldn't have gotten all these insights. There would be no books, no spiritual culture, nothing in my life, you know. So it was all meant to happen like that. But still, we can say that all those personalities who could not maintain their position as sannyasi and guru had this one thing in common: no sheltering relationships. Yes. And I'm thinking, you know, how many more wonderful personalities do we have to lose until we get this point that these sheltering relationships are so important? We lead a risky life if we don't have, you know, at least one person in our life where we can really open our heart, you know, where we can share our innermost struggles and fears and challenges, and who can give us some good advice. And the relationship is confidential. He will not put it on Facebook the next day and make the whole world know about my problems or something. And just to finish, I want to share with you one powerful quote which I put on the back of the book. And I really love this quote. I mean, when I read this the first time, my heart was dancing in ecstasy. So there, this is from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur from the book Amritavani. And he says, "One who gives personal instruction to each and everyone does more for others than the platform speakers do." So I'm a platform speaker here. I'm sitting on a little platform. "Generally, whatever platform speakers say cannot solve the problem of everyone in the audience, nor can it always benefit every individual. A person's defects are better rectified in a private tutorial class or private coaching than in hearing lectures in a school or college. Therefore, those who instruct particular persons separately can award them something more permanent." Wow. I mean, this is in black and white exactly what we're talking about here. And I find it really revolutionary that Bhaktisiddhanta uses the word coaching. Yes. You know? That's revolutionary, because coaching is a very modern term. There's life coach and sport coach and business coach. And actually, in the material world, everybody understands that if we want to become successful, we should have a coach who guides us to success, who is already more successful than we are. People out there understand this. And almost, I think that, you know, maybe we are the only ones who haven't gotten the point yet or something, you know. So, yeah. But here, Bhaktisiddhanta really makes it very clear, you know, that he uses this term coaching. I find this really mind-blowing, you know, that he uses that term already and that he says it clearly. You know, that person who gives this one-to-one thing, he actually gives something more permanent, you know. Yes. Yeah, and I mean, not wanting to undermine the importance of Krishna Katha or something, but really, you know, we can, for, you know, many, many years, just join lectures, hear Katha, oh yeah, it was so nice, but then we just walk out and we just go back to all our ego patterns of behaviors, and we are stuck, you know, in certain ways how we act, because this conditioning is so deep. So, you know, we don't really get anywhere much unless we have somebody who we want to be corrected by, and who shows us where our practice is maybe not quite balanced and where we have to adjust things and where we have to work on internally. Unless we have such a person, we can forever just join the classes and enjoy the Krishna Katha and the wonderful kirtans. But we are stuck in our patterns of behaviors. You know? So that's why we need a mentor. Okay, sorry that I didn't give more time for questions, but we still have some minutes.